You know, I think there are a number of challenges. I mean, the first is the changing nature of work itself. This is both an opportunity and it's a threat. You know, I believe it's not the strongest who survives or the most intelligent, but those most adaptable to change. And the workforce as it exists today is going to look very, very different when my kids enter it. You know, I have kids who are, I have a 13-year-old boy, 11-year-old daughter, 8-year-old boy, and their workforce is going to be different than the one I entered when I left college. And, you know, I think that's challenge number one. And when I say the workforce is going to be different, I mean, first, that it is, as you said, going to be more global. You know, I live in Baltimore, and increasingly people in Baltimore are competing against Bangalore, and not just in terms of labor costs. You know, in the last stage of globalization, work went abroad because it was cheaper. Now, many years into sort of global digitization, work is going abroad because that's actually where the skills are. The second changing nature of the changing workforce that I would highlight is as more of our jobs become gigified, as we go from an increasingly from an employer-based system of employment to project-based employment. This is a good thing, I think, by and large. But by the same token, as workers enter into middle age and need things like family leave, workers' compensation, other things that were historically employer-based, it makes things a little tricky. And then the second biggest category of threats that I would flag are robotics and AI. You know, I think that the rise of the robots and increasingly powerful AI is a net positive. But for people who are mediocre or relatively low-skilled, then the future is going to be a difficult time.
This book is really wide. It's great because it's wide-ranging. You start with robotics. You talk about genomics. You talk about Bitcoin. You talk about we're going from the Cold War to the Code War. You talk about big data. So it's almost a series of essays about these specific challenges and how we can make our way. But in general, my sense is that you're a technologist and you feel positive about the impact of technology on the future.
Oh, I do. Look, I think that while there are some somewhat dark places in the book, I think that tomorrow is going to be better than today. And I think it's in significant measure because of technology. You know, we are going to live longer lives because of the commercialization of genomics. We are going to have more and better information. We're going to have tools to do things much more quickly and effectively. I mean, think about when you bought a house last. My wife and I did this a year and a half ago, and the closing costs buying a new house were over $10,000. It took a couple months. It took accountants and lawyers. You know, with blockchain technology coming into legal processes, what today costs $10,000 and takes 2 months, I think tomorrow could take 2 hours and cost $10. So I think that there's an enormous amount of good that's going to come driven by scientific and technological advancement. I'm not a cyber utopian, but I'm sort of net positive on what it's going to do for the world.
Let me go through some of the issues that we are facing and maybe how you could talk about how technology might impact it, help it, perhaps. One of the biggest, of course, is income inequality. And it's been interesting to watch Silicon Valley address this, starting with Paul Graham, saying, well, you know, the kind of value that Silicon Valley creates is very different than the kind of value Wall Street creates. We're really adding to the economy. But yet, I have to say, the march of technology looks to a lot of people as they lose their jobs and find a difficult time finding new ones, like something that's promoting income inequality, not solving it.
Well, look, I mean, technology does two things. It creates more bounty and more spread. So what does that mean? More bounty means more economic well-being, broadly stated, but it also means things like healthier food. It means access to more and better information. It means less time wasted. So it's not just economics. It creates more bounty, but it also does create more spread. What does that mean? That means that the economic benefits, the shareholders, the people who end up making money, it tends to be concentrated in far fewer hands.
That's not a problem.
It is a problem.
Okay.
You know, so I'm actually not agreeing with anybody who says that, you know, new technologies don't exacerbate income inequality. They do exacerbate income inequality. which is why you need to think about, you know, what are those things we can do to make sure that people aren't left behind?
Right.
Like a guaranteed basic income or strengthening and raising the safety net. I'm not in favor of a basic income. Others in Silicon Valley increasingly are. But, I tend to come down on this where Mark Andreessen does, which is to say, all right, in a world of more bounty and more spread, let's make sure that we have a really strong and high safety net.
Yeah, I think it was Mark who said that, well, everything's going to get almost infinitely cheap. And so this will handle income inequality because you won't need much income to live like a king. That seems like a utopian future. I wouldn't hate it, but it also seems difficult to reach.
I think about growing up, and when I was growing up in West Virginia, it was only rich people who had color TVs in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And today, you can go into the hood, into the poorest community in Baltimore, where I used to teach, and walk into a shack, and there's a color TV in there.
More than that, I remember going to rural China, and one of the status symbols was an HDTV, a fairly large HDTV, in essentially what it would have been a peasant household 20 years ago.
So this is exactly the point. So maybe these people on a relative basis actually don't have much money, but they have more bounty. Mm. They have more well-being. If somebody is poor today and has a big screen color TV, and in 1975 somebody was rich and had a small color TV,
what does it mean to be rich and poor? I understand.
What does it mean to be rich and poor? Yeah. It's all on a relative basis. And that's not to say that being poor is something that we ought to sort of wave our hands at.
Absolutely not.
But what it is to say is, like, look, you know, if people are eating better and healthier, if they are getting more and better entertainment, you know, we do have to measure these things, sort of this non-economic well-being as well, which is what Mark Andreessen oftentimes pushes.
Yeah.